The Catra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome, everyone, to this deep dive. Today, we're tackling something that, well, it often feels pretty complex, maybe a bit remote.
The European Union.
Exactly. But we're looking at it through a really essential guide by John Pinder. His analysis is, well, seminal.
Yeah, and Pinder's core argument, really, is that the EU isn't just, you know, some huge trade bloc or a pile of regulations.
Right, not just Brussels bureaucracy.
No, it's actually one of the most significant political experiments in modern history.
Mm-hmm.
A truly bold attempt to move beyond centuries of conflict.
And his central question, the one we want to unpack, is how? How did a continent literally defined by violent nationalism build this durable system? Shared laws, peace.
And Pinder's answer is deceptively simple. Pooled sovereignty.
Ah, okay. So nations willingly sort of limiting their own power?
Precisely. Sharing it with neighbors to gain something bigger, collective stability, security, influence. It sounds straightforward, maybe.
Maybe on paper.
Right. But Pinder shows us the decades-long, messy institutional struggle to actually make that happen.
Before we get into the nuts and bolts of it all, let's talk about the author himself, John Pinder. Who was he?
He lived from 1924 to 2015. A really distinguished British economist, and actually a key figure in establishing European studies as a proper academic field.
So he knew his stuff. Credentials.
Oh, definitely. Longtime director of the Policy Studies Institute, professor at the prestigious College of Europe in Bruges. He was deeply involved.
And what makes his perspective so useful, maybe unique?
Well, he wasn't just a detached observer. This is crucial. Pinder was a passionate Federalist. He believed in the European project. Deeply.
So there's a commitment there, not just dry analysis.
Exactly. His work combines that rigorous academic thinking with, you know, a real commitment to the political philosophy behind it. He wanted to explain the EU's, as he might put it, sole and ultimate purpose.
So the book itself, the European Union, what was its main goal? Who was he writing for?
Primarily to demystify it, to make sense of this incredibly intricate machinery for policymakers, certainly, but also for students, citizens. Anyone needing to grasp how Europe actually functions.
And the core thesis, again.
It's powerful. Despite all the crises, the complexity, the arguments which Pinder acknowledges the EU successfully transformed Europe from that zone of constant war,
which had defined it for centuries,
into a zone of peace, relative prosperity, and shared democratic values. That's the huge achievement he highlights.
And how did they achieve this transformation? You mentioned it wasn't like other international bodies.
Right. Pinder stresses this community method. It's not a standard international organization like the UN, where states keep all their sovereignty. But it's also not a federal superstate like the United States, where the central government holds ultimate power in many areas.
It's something else entirely.
Exactly. It's this unique, innovative hybrid, sui generis, one of a kind, built on that voluntary pooling of sovereignty into shared supranational institutions. Institutions above the nation state, but created by them.
And Pinder's book traces this whole journey.
Yes, from the absolute trauma of World War II and the visionary response of people like Monet and Schuman through building the common market, creating the euro, right up to the structure we see more or less today. It's quite a story.
Okay, let's dive into that story. The genesis. Where does it all begin?
It begins with catastrophe. Pinder is clear. The EU is the direct answer to the utter failure of the old nation-state system, the system that produced two world wars in 30 years.
There was a profound moral imperative then. Something had to change.
Absolutely. The old balance of power politics just led to cycles of violence. The question was existential. How do you stop this? How do you tame aggressive nationalism?
And the answer wasn't just treaties. It was something more fundamental.
It was radical. The genius move, Pinder argues, came with the Schuman Declaration in 1950. The goal was audacious. Make war between France and Germany, the core rivals, materially impossible.
Materially impossible? How do you even do that?
By taking the raw materials of war coal and steel out of purely national control. They created the European Coal and Steel Community, the ECSC.
Ah, so putting the keys to the war machine, basically, under joint control.
Precisely. A common supranational high authority managed it. No single nation could unilaterally gear up for war, using those resources against the others. It forced interdependence.
And this leads to that concept you mentioned earlier, spillover.
Yes, functional spillover.
Yeah.
Pinder explains this really well. The idea is that cooperating effectively in one technical area, like coal and steel,
creates pressure, or maybe just the logical need to cooperate in related areas.
Exactly. If you harmonize coal and steel markets, suddenly you notice trade barriers elsewhere. Then you need common transport rules.
Mm.
Then maybe standards for products. It builds momentum.
It's like starting small, building trust in one area, and that naturally pushes you towards cooperating more broadly.
That's the Monin method in action. Small, concrete steps that create de facto solidarity, making bigger political leaps possible later. It was pragmatic, incremental.
Clever, because it avoids the big upfront political fight over sovereignty.
Right. But managing this growing interdependence required building unique institutions. And that's where Pinder really drills down into the EU's machinery.
Okay, let's talk about that machinery, the famous institutional triangle. How does Pinder explain the balance and the tensions within it?
Okay, so first you have the European Commission. Pinder describes this as the supranational engine. It's the executive branch, proposes laws, and crucially, its job is to represent the collective European interest, not individual countries. It guards the treaties.
But isn't that the body people often see as, you know, the faceless bureaucrats in Brussels, unelected power?
That's the common critique, and Pinder addresses it. The system is designed to balance that. The Commission proposes, yes, but it doesn't decide alone. That power is checked by the Council of the European Union.
Which is?
That's where the national governments come in directly. It's made up of ministers from each member state. So the French agriculture minister, the German finance minister, and so on, depending on the topic. They represent their national interests. It's the intergovernmental anchor.
Okay, so Commission pushes the European view. Council defends national views. What's the third point?
The European Parliament. And Pinder highlights its growing importance. It's directly elected by EU citizens across all member states.
The democratic element.
Increasingly so. Its powers have expanded hugely over the decades. It now co-legislates with the Council on most EU laws and approves the budget. It's meant to address that democratic deficit concern.
So you have this constant push and pull, supranational vision, national interests, democratic oversight.
That's the dynamic core of the community method. But what makes it all stick? What gives it teeth? Exactly. The Court of Justice of the European Union, CJEU. This is maybe the most powerful, yet often least understood, institution. Pinder emphasizes its role.
How so?
Through landmark rulings, the court established the principle of supremacy of EU law. In areas where member states have agreed to pool sovereignty, EU law trumps conflicting national law.
That's huge. It creates a whole new legal order that citizens and companies can rely on across the bloc.
Absolutely. Pinder stresses that this legal integration was fundamental. It arguably preceded and enabled deeper political integration.
So this legal and institutional framework, what major achievements did it make possible, according to Pinder?
Well, the big economic one is undoubtedly the single market.
More than just a free trade area.
Oh, much more. Removing tariffs was the easy part. The real political heavy lifting, Pinder explains, was dismantling countless non-tariff barriers. Think differing product safety standards, professional qualifications not being recognized, environmental rules. Harmonizing or mutually recognizing all that was a massive undertaking.
It created a truly seamless economic space.
Built on those famous four freedoms. Free movement of goods, services, capital, and crucially, people. The ability for an EU citizen to live, work, study, or retire in another member state, that's a direct result of pooled sovereignty.
And that economic integration, that single market, logically led somewhere else?
To the euro. Pinder frames monetary union not just as an economic project, but as a profound political act.
A statement of shared destiny.
Very much so.
Yeah.
It was seen as necessary to make the single market function optimally, eliminating currency exchange costs and risks. But it was also a huge leap of faith politically.
And Pinder acknowledges the difficulties there too, right? The tension.
Definitely. He highlights the inherent challenge.
Mm-hmm.
You have one monetary policy set by the independent European Central Bank, ECB, for the whole Eurozone.
But you still have many different national governments running their own budgets and fiscal policies, taxes, spending.
Exactly. That mismatch, that lack of fiscal union alongside monetary union, is a built-in source of tension and crisis, as we saw with the Eurozone debt crisis. Pinder knew this was an ongoing challenge.
Okay, stepping back from the specific mechanisms and achievements, what are the overarching themes or messages Pinder wants us to take away?
I think the first and most fundamental is peace through integration. This is Pinder's bedrock message. The EU, through its institutions and shared laws, made war between its members, particularly France and Germany, literally unthinkable.
It's an institutional solution to an age-old problem of conflict.
A remarkably successful one, he argues. The second theme is institutional innovation. The EU is like a living laboratory for governance.
No, so.
It demonstrates new ways of managing complex issues across diverse nations, balancing the need for effective, centralized action. The Commission's role with democratic accountability via the Parliament and national governments in the Council. It forces us to think beyond traditional categories of state or international organization.
Right, that sui generis idea again.
And the third key theme for Pinder was enlargement as a stabilizer. He saw expanding the EU, especially after the Cold War, as its most powerful foreign policy tool.
Bringing in the Central and Eastern European countries.
Yes. He viewed it as a moral obligation to reunite the European family, but also as incredibly strategic.
How strategic?
By requiring candidate countries to adopt democracy, the rule of law, and market economies before joining, the EU effectively exported stability eastward without firing a single shot. It locked in democratic reforms and integrated these countries into the Western economic and political sphere, a huge geopolitical success.
Pinder's writing sounds like it's full of these concise, powerful ideas. Are there any specific quotes that really capture his perspective?
Absolutely. His analysis is built on clear principles. One key quote captures that incremental, pragmatic approach we discussed, often linked to Jean Monnet.
Okay.
Europe will not be made all at once or according to a single plan. It will be built through concrete achievements which first create a de facto solidarity.
Build the trust brick by brick, basically. Don't try for the grand design immediately.
Exactly. Then there's the legal aspect, often quoting the court itself, like the famous Van Gendelenloos ruling. The European Union constitutes a new legal order for the benefit of which the states have limited their sovereign rights.
That clearly states the deal. States limit sovereignty to gain the benefits of this new legal system. Powerful.
It underpins everything. And finally, that quote summing up its unique nature, which we keep coming back to because it's so important. The EU is neither a state nor an international organization. It is a sui generis entity.
You just can't analyze it properly if you try to force it into old boxes.
You really can't. It demands its own understanding.
So how can we maybe apply some of these insights in our own lives or professionally? Any real-life applications Pinder's analysis sparks?
Well, professionally, I think the EU's principle of subsidiarity is incredibly relevant, especially for managers or leaders.
Subsidiarity. Remind us, making decisions at the lowest, most effective level.
Precisely. Don't centralize decisions that are better made locally or regionally. For a business leader running, say, a multinational company, or even just a complex project with different teams, it's a great model. Set the overall strategy and standards centrally, like the Commission and EU law, but empower local branches or teams, like member states, to implement things in ways that suit their specific context, as long as they meet the core objectives. It balances efficiency with local autonomy and buy-in.
That makes sense. Avoids that feeling of detached HQ dictating everything. And personally.
Personally, I think that Monnet method is brilliant for personal change.
Mm.
You know, instead of making some huge, daunting New Year's resolution that you'll probably abandon by February.
Guilty.
Right. Start with small, concrete, manageable steps. Yeah. Like the ECSC was the small step for Europe. Maybe it's just adding one healthy habit or learning one small skill related to a bigger goal. Those small wins build momentum, create that de facto solidarity with your future self, and make the next bigger step feel possible, even necessary.
I like that. Building irreversible momentum in your own life and globally.
Globally, Pinder's work underscores the EU's as a potential model, or at least a source of lessons, for other regions trying to build cooperation and overcome conflict. Think of ASEAN in Southeast Asia or the African Union.
They face similar challenges of diversity and historical tensions.
Exactly. The EU's experience its successes and its failures offers invaluable insights into institutional design, managing sovereignty debates, and fostering shared prosperity. It shows it can be done, albeit imperfectly.
So as you wrap up, what's the final takeaway, your lasting impression from Pinder's analysis?
For me, it's that the EU is fundamentally an unfinished project. And Pinder suggests its strength actually lies in that. It wasn't designed to reach some perfect final state.
It evolves.
It evolves by confronting crises. The euro crisis, Brexit, debates over migration, democratic backsliding in some members. These aren't signs of imminent collapse necessarily, but challenges that force the EU to adapt, deepen cooperation, or find new balances. It kind of muddles through using crises as catalysts.
So its resilience is in its flexibility, its ongoingness.
I think Pinder would argue that, my final thought, the enduring power of well-designed institutions. Pinder shows that incredibly ambitious goals, like achieving lasting peace between nations that fought for centuries, aren't just pipe dreams.
It can be achieved.
They can be achieved patiently through innovative institutional design that acknowledges and manages competing interests, balances national and collective needs, and puts shared law above raw power. It's a testament to rational, cooperative statecraft.
A powerful message indeed. Peace through pooled sovereignty, made real through unique institutions.
That's the essence of Pinder's analysis.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acotra Foundation.